welcome to At the Movies. Each year, we take a month and we do a series using some of the blockbuster hits, films of the past year, or at least some of the films that they've always been blockbusters, but some of the films of the last year, and use them to illustrate biblical truth. And we're doing that today as well. Our movie this week that we're going to be using is the movie Captain America. Captain America. I'm not sure if you've seen that. If you haven't, we'll try to help you out along the way. There's lots and lots out and a lot of the story plot. We try not to do too many spoilers along the way, too, for those who haven't seen it. That's our focus. That's the movie we're using. Our title, actually, today for the message is Living from the Inside Out. Living from the inside out. You see, oftentimes it's easy for us to sort of put on our mask or our facades to sort of keep things in the public view for pretty well contained. Recognize that down inside of us, we're not really who we're portraying on the outside. And so today we want to talk about not just living with the facade, but living as a real person. Living with the truth of who we are by dealing with the issues of our heart. And so we're talking about living from the inside. What's in you? Because the honest truth is, eventually, no matter how good you are at the mask or the facades of your life, eventually, what's inside of you is going to creep out. What's inside of you is going to creep out. We're also going to use the biblical character today of David for our message series. Our first passage that we're going to look at this morning is from the first book of Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 16. We're going to begin reading with verse 4, but I want to sort of set the scene for the verses we're going to be looking at. Samuel is a prophet, a son of God. He really is the last judge of Israel, and the people have been clamoring. They've been begging Samuel, "We want a king just like all the other nations have." And finally God says to Samuel, "Okay, we're going to give them what they want." And he says, "Now you need to tell them, here's all the things that are going to happen when you get a king." And so they're ready. And he told them, and they said, "Yep, we still want a king." And so God selected a man by the name of Saul. A man by the name of Saul. But it didn't take very long for Saul to prove not to be a good king of the people of Israel. He began to do things his own way. He began to operate from selfish motives. And he disobeyed. He did exactly the opposite of what God time and time again asked him to do. And finally, God rejects him as the king of Israel. And he says to Samuel, "Stop grieving that I've rejected Saul. I'm going to send you to anoint a new king." And so he sends him to the town of Bethlehem. And that's where we're going to pick up today in 1 Samuel chapter 16, beginning with verse 4. Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him trembling and said, "Do you come peaceably?" It must have been a little, when the judge showed up, folks seemed to get a little afraid. They were trembling. And Samuel says to them, "Peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is now before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. He said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any of these." Samuel said to Jesse, "Are all your sons here?" And he said, the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." He sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. The Lord said, "Rise and anoint him, for this is the one." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. Our key theme really comes out of verse 7 in 1 Samuel. It's this point that we want to make today. God sees the heart. God sees the heart. In 1 Samuel 16:7, you heard these words, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. No doubt, every one of us here has, from time to time, had an encounter with someone, and we immediately drew a conclusion about them from the way they looked. Perhaps it was their hairstyle. Perhaps it was whatever was on their body. It might have been clothing. It might have been tattoos or piercings. It might have been where they were at. But immediately, because of them and their surroundings, we drew certain conclusions about them. It's common. If you've ever interviewed people, when someone walks in, you sort of size them up right away. And we often say, in some of the coaching I've done, that first appearances, that first experiences are crucial. Because sometimes it's awfully hard to get past first experiences or those first appearances and get down to really who someone is. In fact, my guess is, for most every one of us here, there have been times in your life when you've gotten surprised that the conclusions that you drew about someone were proved to be false. The assumptions that you made on your first interaction with them, or first encounter with them down the road, were proved not to be true. In fact, they could have been proved not to be true in two different ways. You could have been amazed, hey, they're not bad after all. They're a really good guy, or they're a really good gal. Or it could have gone the other way, right? I mean, you could have seen with someone and said, hey, they look like they're really with it. But after getting to know them for a while, you thought, man, they don't have it together. They're not good to hang around. They're a bad influence. But you started out thinking that they would be a really great friend. They would be really helpful. They'd be good, really be good, somebody good to hang out with. We often make judgments based on that first appearance. But God sees deeper than that. God sees our heart. And that's what he told Samuel here. Don't look at the outward thing. That's how man sees, but I see deeper than that. I see to the heart. I see to a person's character. In fact, Luke, when he writes the book of Acts, will record this. "But God removed Saul and replaced him with David, a man about whom God said, 'I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will do everything I want him to do.'" I said, here's someone who has a heart like mine. Now, we all know that David was not perfect. David was still a sinner, and there were times when he failed miserably, when he made wrong choices. But my one observation about David is that when he makes America is the story of a young man by the name of Steve Rogers. It's World War II, and Steve desperately wants to join up. In fact, he's tried a whole bunch of times, but he keeps getting rejected. Let's watch this scene between him and his best friend, Bucky Barnes.
Well, your father died of
mustard gas. He was in the 107th Infantry. I was hoping it could be assigned.
Mother,
she was a nurse in the TB ward. Got hit, couldn't shake it.
Sorry, son.
War continues to ravage Europe, but help is on the way. Every able-bodied young man is lining up to serve his country. Even little Timmy is doing his part, collecting scrap metal. Nice work, Timmy.
You really going to do this again?
Well, it's a fair. I'm going to try my luck.
That's who? Steve from Ohio? If they'll catch your horse, they'll actually take you.
Look, I know you don't think I can do it.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
I know it's a war.
Why are you so keen to fight? There's so many important jobs.
What are you going to do?
Collect scrap?
Yes.
My little red wagon.
I know. I'm not going to sit in a factory, Bucky. Bucky, come on. There are men laying down their lives. I got no right to do any less than that.
Steve wants to join up. He wants to enlist, but he keeps getting rejected. Seen the list that goes down the sheet of all the things that are wrong with him. And there he watches the clip, the advertising, the promotion to join up. Every able-bodied young man is serving their country. And the message time and time again to Steve Rogers is, if you don't measure up, you don't have what it takes. And yet Steve Rogers doesn't give up. Doesn't stop trying. There at the very end of the clip, he talked about, can I do anything less? Other men are giving their life for their country. Can I do anything less? You see, for every one of us, how we live our lives comes down to the choices of our heart. Who we're going to be. It's not been all predetermined and fixed in a box. We have choices to make along the way. How am I going to respond to situations and circumstances? How am I going to live out my life? What choices will I make? And it all comes from the character in us. It all comes from the very heart of who we are and what we value. At the end of that first clip that we looked at, I know it was hard to see the another man walks up and begins to eavesdrop between Steve and Bucky's conversation. He's Dr. Abraham Erskine,
said, wars are fought with weapons, but they are won by men. We are going to win this war because we have the best men. The Strategic Scientific Reserve is an allied effort made up of the best minds in the free world. Our goal is to create the best army in history. But every army starts with one man. At the end of this week, we will choose that man. He will be the first in a new breed of super soldiers.
It's a clear choice.
When you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, I let it slide.
Look at that. He's making me cry.
I am looking for qualities beyond the physical.
Do you know how long it took to set up this project? All the grumbling I had to do in front of Senator, what's his name's committees?
Yes, I know. I'm well aware of that.
Then throw me a bone. Hodgman's got every task we gave him. He's big, he's fast, he obeys orders, he's a soldier.
He's a bully.
All of us along the way will find that the choices of our heart get tested. Tested in moments that we least expect it. Tested by life, by struggles and troubles, calamity. Tested by everyday events that we have oftentimes no control over at all. But life will test us all. And the choices that we make will come from deep within us, especially in those crucible moments. What will we do? How will we respond? What will we react with? I want to share with you this morning four areas from our hearts that I believe we can use and develop to respond in godly ways. The first is I believe that we can choose to live courageously. We can choose to live courageously. Steve Rogers gets in. Because Dr. Abraham Erskine has seen something in him that moves beyond the average person who everybody else thinks is the most likely choice. And you saw in those clips taken along from some different segments in the movie about the way he responded to things that happened. And there at the very end, when the dummy grenade gets thrown in and he leaps upon it, makes a choice to act in a way that's not selfish, to be courageous in order to protect others. Courage doesn't always mean to act without fear, but it does mean to act for the rights and the protection. puts our own selves in harm's way. David knew what that was like. David would go on as from being that shepherd boy to being the one who slays Goliath. And eventually will lead the armies of Israel to conquer many people. But because of that, King Saul will become jealous of him. Envious. Envious of the admiration that others extend to him. He will begin to seek to kill him. David knew what it was to face battles in life. In Psalm 27, David says this, "Though a mighty army surrounds me, my heart will not be afraid. Even if I am attacked, I will remain confident." And then verse 14, "Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous." Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. Things did not always go the way David you'd think the anointed of David would have gone for him. He was the chosen one. He was selected to be king, and yet we find him hiding. We find him on the run. And yet David can proclaim, "Even when my enemies surround me, I'm not going to respond out of fear. I'm going to live a life of courage. I'm going to live a life that's brave." And for every one of us here, you're going to have those moments in life when life seems to hit you right in the gut, when everything seems to be working against you, and there seems to be no one at all, perhaps even in your camp on your side, standing beside of you. In those moments, trust the things that God has planted in your heart and in your life, and stand firm. Be confident, as David said in Psalm 27. Don't let fear overwhelm you. Secondly, choose to be guided by right motives. justify. We can convince ourselves. Well, the end result is really going to be good. And so it's okay. It's okay to do this thing. Because in the end, it'll all be okay for everybody. Time and time again, we watch people rise to places of power and results and prestige, and yet to see them crumble and fall. And we begin to wonder what happens, and somehow the motives are all mixed up. Paul will tell the church at Thessalonica in his first letter to them, "For we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our heart." He alone examines the motives of our heart. We choose to please God, not people. And yet we live in a day and a culture which is really probably no different than any other day or culture, when by and large we want to please others. We all want to be liked and we want to be accepted. It's so easy to fall in the trap, to make choices more viewed on how others are going to perceive them rather than what we know is right. What's your motives? What are you operating from? Why are you making the choices that you're making? What's in your heart? The third thing that we, way that we respond from our heart, that we make choices, is we can choose to exhibit a heart of compassion. We can choose to exhibit a heart of compassion. In the movie Captain America, Dr. Erskine, Steve Rogers, gets chosen. You knew that was coming. It's no surprise to you. He gets chosen. And the night before, what he's chosen for is a special experiment where they're going to inject his body with these fluids. They're going to transform him into this He-Man kind of guy, and into sort of the superhero that becomes Captain America eventually. And Dr. Erskine comes to visit him the night before this procedure is going to take place. And Steve wants to know, why me? Why did you choose me? Of everybody else, why me? Dr. Erskine begins to talk to him about why he was chosen, about the threat of the Nazis and what happened, and then why ultimately he was chosen. And I think you'll find this interesting.
Why me? I suppose that is the only question that matters. This is from Augsburg, my city. So many people forget that the first country the Nazis invaded was their own. You know, after the last war, my people struggled. They felt weak, they felt small. Then Hitler comes along with the marching, the big show, and the flags. He hears of me, my work, and he finds me. And he says, "You." He says, "You will make a stop." Well, I am not interested. Sends the head of Hydra, his research division, a brilliant scientist by the name of Johann Schmidt. Now, sin amplifies everything that is inside. So good becomes great. Bad becomes worse. This is why you were chosen. Because the strong man who has known power all his life, he loses respect for that power. But a weak man loses the value of strength and knows compassion.
John Smith, he's head of the Hydra Project. It's a military research division to seek to make the Nazis win, to help the Nazis to win by coming up with secret weapons. And Johann Schmidt wants power. So eventually he takes from Dr. Erskine the serum that wasn't ready yet. And he takes it and he injects it into himself. And you'll notice what Dr. Erskine says, that what happens is the serum amplifies, while it makes a person physically strong, it also amplifies what's in a person. And so when there's evil, when there's greed, when there's selfishness in a person, it's amplified. And so he says, that's why I've chosen you. Because you respect her. Because you have compassion. Choose a heart. Exhibit a heart of compassion. You see, every one of us have an opportunity to determine how we're going to respond to people and to situations. And are we going to respond with a compassionate heart? Are we going to respond with brute force? Are we going to respond again out of selfishness? Johann Schmidt becomes stronger and stronger, committed to actually taking Hitler's place and leading a world conquest. I found it interesting when I began to look at David's life that I didn't find a single place where David talked about him, his own self having compassion. But time and time again, what I did find is that David writes about the God he serves who has compassion. Remember we said that God found in David a heart, a man after his own heart. But I did find this reference. Remember I already told you that Saul is chasing David. He wants to kill him. He wants to eliminate him. He's jealous of him. And time and again, David has opportunity to take out Saul, to bring him down, to attack him. And yet David does not do it, even while Saul relentlessly pursues him. And in one of those great instances where David had an opportunity to take him out and doesn't, afterwards he comes out and demonstrates to Saul that, hey, I could have just killed you, but I didn't do it. Do you see my heart? Do you see who I am? And Saul, in a moment, in just a moment of honesty, says in 1 Samuel 24, verse 17, David, you're a better person than I am. You treated me with kindness, even though I've been cruel to you. You treated me with kindness, been chosen of God, holy and beloved. Put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You see, we have choices to make. Are you going to choose to live a life of compassion, kindness toward others? How are you going to do it? What are you going to do? And then, choose to be obedient. Choose to be obedient. If you notice the scripture we read very early on, when it talks about selecting David, he says, he'll do all that I've asked him to do. And David did that. I mean, in Psalm 119, he writes in Psalm 119, my heart is set on keeping your decrees to the very end. And that's just one place where David revels in God's word and in his law and in a sense of obedience to him. Now, you know David didn't always get it right. And he failed miserably at times. We've already alluded to that. He wasn't perfect. He was broken like we are. But yet the determination of his heart, the direction, the bent of his living was toward God and what God would have him to do. Charles Wesley, in his hymn, Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, will write about that when he writes this line, take away our bent to sinning, Alpha and Omega be. Change the course of our lives. Change the direction, the bent of our lives. Solomon is David's son who's going to inherit the kingship. He's been chosen of God. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, David is talking to his son. And he says, Solomon, my son, worship God and obey him with all your heart and mind, just as I have done. He knows all your thoughts and your reasons for doing things. And so if you turn to him, he will hear your prayers. But if you ignore him, he will reject you. Clip you're going to watch, you're going to see Steve Rogers' transformation and just a little bit of what happens after that.
Ready? Ladies and gentlemen, today we take not another step towards annihilation, but the first step on the path to peace. We begin with a series of micro-injections into the subject's major muscle. The serum infusion will cause immediate cellular change. And then, to stimulate growth, the subject will be saturated with vital oil.
Serum infusion, beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Sir, that's all I want.
And congratulations. You just got promoted.
In the crucibles, how do we respond? What do we do? Steve Rogers is transformed and changed. Eventually will become known as Captain America in the storyline. But along the way, Dr. Erskine is killed. But you notice the words. He chose you. I have a question for all of us this morning. And God's choosing. Jesus Christ came and died for every one of us. He chose mankind. Even with our brokenness and our fallacies of our own hearts. But my question for all of us this morning is, how's your heart? Where are we at? Where are you at when it comes to your heart? What are the characteristics that flow from your life because they flow from the condition of your heart? David would write in Psalm 139, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you. And lead me along the paths of everlasting life." Search me. Search me, O God. Know my heart. Well, eventually, Steve Erskine, Captain America, gets a chance to go after Johann Schmidt. And toward the end of the movie, there's a scene where he actually allowed himself to be captured so that he could get into Schmidt's headquarters. And I want you to watch this scene as we come toward the end of the message.
Arrogance may not be a uniquely American trait, but I must say you do it better than anyone. But there are limits to what even you can do. Can tell you otherwise.
He told me you were insane.
He resented my genius and tried to deny me what was rightfully mine, but he gave you everything. So, what made you so special?
Nothing.
John Smith said he wanted to deny me, but he gave you everything. The story of Scripture really is about a God who chose to give us everything. He entrusted all of creation to us. We failed along the way, and we've sinned. But then he even came and offered his own self for each of us, a sacrifice for us. Now, like there in that scene at the very end of the clip that I showed, Schmidt asked him, "What's so special about you?" Nothing. I'm just a kid from Brooklyn. Every one of us might think there's nothing really special, there's nothing really grand about us. We're just from Oil City, or we're just this, or we're just that, or I just do this. But I want you to know this morning that God has chosen us. Jesus has died for you. Where's your heart? Where's your heart? Are you available? Are you willing? Steve Rogers seemingly had nothing. invite you this morning just to give yourself to Jesus, asking that he would begin the work of making your heart new. The scripture reminds us that the prophets write that God takes our hearts of stone and he transforms them into hearts of flesh, hearts that beat with life and hope and vitality. And he still does that today if we yield ourselves to him. For others of you here this morning, maybe your next step is to pray, asking God to help you to see your heart and how it affects the way you live. And there's something God needs to reveal to you so that you can address it, so you can begin to cooperate with him in that area of your heart. Or maybe this morning you already know an area that you need to work on. You don't even have to pray about it. You know. Maybe God's already been speaking for a while. And maybe it's one of the four areas that we identified this morning. And if that's the case, this next step is I'm going to focus on number and 1, 2, 3, or 4. This week, as I live from